Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And Shelby, I did notice that your eyes are a little bit bigger than other people's. I feel like your jaw is sort of an odd shape. If your hairline, if we look at it.
It's complimentary. It's all good things. Something
you're just
about
like
nice
a little bit, you know, sort of like uglier hair. And grossier than most
people.
No, so I think that, yeah, I was like, maybe
remarkable.
She's an alien.
Set apart.
Okay. Well, set apart. I guess I can agree on that. we are talking about Begonia this week, Yorgos Lanthimos' new movie where Jesse Plemons accuses Emma Stone of being an alien and kidnaps her. Yes. It played at Venice, I want to say, Venice Film Festival, or maybe Telluride. And then I had to wait and see this like a pleb it didn't go to New York or Toronto. So hard life for me.
My gosh. Right. Okay. So you had to go pay for a ticket and sit down with a bunch of uneducated swine.
Yes, exactly. I said, a lot of ugly people here. No aliens like me. But I love Yorgos Lanthimos. I feel like he's one of my favorite filmmakers.
Yeah, I famously adore Poor Things.
I love Poor Things. I really like The Favorite. I was the one person who saw and liked Kinds of Kindness last year, which was a very weird movie. Also, this past summer, they re-released Dogtooth, which is like one of his old like Greek movies. So I saw that in theater, and I really liked that as well. They're always like very weird and kind of gory in a strange way. There's a lot of strange things going on. Yeah, surrealist. But I love the big swings that he takes and kind of like the wild premises and sort of just like letting the movie go where it goes. And then also because all of the premises are so bonkers, it leaves a lot of room for the actors to do a lot of really cool, good work. So I was very excited for Begonia going in. Yeah. I'm sure you were less excited about this than I was.
Yeah, I have the opposite reaction to Yorgos generally. I still stand by a unique hatred for Poor Things and what he attempted and said and all of that, blah, blah, blah. So I've had a grudge since then and since having to sit through that award cycle. I did not see Kinds of Kindness. I will say that this premise at least intrigued me more. Like, it was set in our current reality, which I think helps with a surrealist filmmaker like that to kind of have something at least real to ground me personally within his film, which is why something like The Favorite I liked more, or The Lobster. I liked that premise where these two conspiracy theorists are obsessed with the CEO being an alien, so they kidnap her. And I do really enjoy Jesse Plemons. So I was like, okay, I'm open-minded for this experience. I did not think it would be like my favorite, but I was like, okay, at least I'll enjoy this. Like, I knew I was going to see it because of this podcast, but I was also like, well, I don't think I'll be miserable through it. And mostly I was right. I think it was like kind of a weird watch. Like, it was very uncomfortable at times, just like kind of a miserable like watch just because of the premise. It's two people talking at each other for about 2 hours, both of them like kind of having this duel of words and concepts, and they're trying to convince the other that they're right. And so it's very like talky. But on top of that, it's also very sweaty and grimy, and the dirt in this house alone, I was like, oh my God, like, Jesse Plemons, get in the shower, please. Like, you can shower this morning. I promise you'll be okay. But in general, I was like, I was on board. I don't know. I was thinking of you saying last week that I'd probably hate this. And so I was like thinking of that while I was watching it. And I was like, I don't know if I hate this, but I also don't know if it's like working for me. I didn't walk away thinking I understood exactly what the goal was there. But I didn't necessarily hate it. I felt like it was a well done and entertaining enough movie. But then reading the reviews, I was like, oh, was this the higher message? I didn't really get that, I guess.
So we'll get to the ending later, I guess. Yeah. But I feel like that does really sort of like shift things. And I was talking with a friend about this, and he was like, yeah, I really liked it. And then halfway through, I sort of thought I knew what the twist was going to be. And I was like, if that's the twist, I'm not going to like it as much. And then that was the twist. And so he was kind of like, felt like it didn't work as well.
I feel like it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mean,
like, even in the press, like,
I saw a tweet. Like, I think if this movie came out and you had no idea who Yorgos Lanthimos was, then like you might have a different read on what was going to happen in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his movies are all so strange, you kind of have to, and especially the trailer and stuff, like, really only seems to set up the first sort of like initial part of the movie.
Yeah.
You do kind of have to think like, okay, this is going to go someplace that, you know, different. It's not just going to like stay in this. But yeah, the first half of the movie, the first three quarters of the movie are just like these two guys kidnapping this pharmaceutical CEO and locking her in the basement of their house, where they are claiming that she is an alien and sort of trying to get her to confess that she is an alien. And she is claiming that she's not an alien and that they're crazy. And, you know, she's like trying to escape, and they're trying to, you know, sort of like torture the truth out of her in some ways. So, yeah, it is a lot of like talking back and forth and sort of arguing. And you do feel like those arguments are in a lot of cases futile, because it's like, okay, well, if she isn't an alien, like, what, you know, it's sort of like the witch hunt kind of thing, where it's like, okay, well, if she isn't a witch, then, you know, like, what is she gonna do? She's just gonna say that she's not a witch. If she was a witch, she'd also say that she's not gonna be a witch. So there's not really any like way for her to win in this scenario. But I did really love I did just love how they set up these two characters. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was very sort of realistic to these types of people and who they are in the real world. Because one of the first scenes with Emma Stone is you're watching her have to like basically tell her employees that she is required to tell them that they don't need to stay after 5 o'clock, but also that like it's a job, so she obviously wants them to work like late into the night, as most bosses do. So her being like, oh yeah, and like, you know, like, everybody leave by 5, like, unless, you know, you have other work to do, in which case, you know, like, you got to get that work done, but like, also like, leave at 5. And I was like, this is such a good representation of this type of person. Like, I have been in and had conversations that are like this before, where it's like, yeah, they're evil corporate overlords, they're terrible, but they have to sort of like, because of government standards and DEI or whatever else is going on, like, pretend that they're not horrible people briefly in like weird ways that come across as disingenuous. So I thought that like the sort of class struggle warfare that was going on in the first half was very realistic. And then you have Jesse Plemons' character, who is like, you know, who bad things have happened to him, and he's, you know, in a really bad situation, and that kind of keeps getting worse, and it's driven him to this, you know, conspiracy theorist place where I think a lot of people do eventually end up. You know, if like, I think conspiracy theory in a lot of ways is like a alternative to religion. It's like, if your life is bad, you have to think that there is something that can sort of like save you, or that you can do, or that is the reason for that. And well, so
I sort of get like confused with the tone or the angle or the perspective of this movie, because it reminded me a lot of Eddington, which yes. was the COVID movie that came out earlier this year, and similarly
also with Emma Stone.
Oh yeah, had a lot to say about.
I think this was more streamlined than that, though.
Yeah. But I think there were a lot of similar, like, oh, the era of the internet conspiracy, and like, how do mm-hmm. we function with this, and who's really behind it, and how do we know who actually is at fault here for all of humanity's woes, and what mm-hmm. do we do to fix it? And so it's like interesting having that come out the same year, and then having this. And there is something like playful in this movie, maybe, because you do have these tropes in the two figures, and kind of like watching Jesse Plemons explain his conspiracy with like the most outlandish conspiracy about the Andromedan race of aliens and their ship and their magic hair that allows them to communicate. And they need to rub lotion on Emma Stone because it'll stop the... Like, he just has an answer for everything, and it all sounds so outlandish and cuckoo bananas. And, you know, you're like, oh, this is QAnon. This is Pizzagate. Like, you are watching this man, this sweaty, sweaty man, explain to his sweet cousin, like, no, I'm right, and this is everything that will fix our lives. And none of it is rooted in any sort of reality. But he's so insistent. And then you have Emma Stone with her perfect like corporate speak and all of that. And she's very calm throughout this ordeal, and very trying to be logical and trying to use like reason and, you know, toying with Jesse Plemons to try and poke holes in his beliefs. But then it was sort of like, you know, you get an hour and a half of that. And I was sort of like, okay, like, is this movie just meant to be a fun game of cat and mouse? But it feels like there's a larger point being made. But existing in this is she not question sort of wrinkles how you're supposed to feel about these characters. So I was kind of like, through the movie, I don't know, like, what was your experience knowing Yorgos as a filmmaker often has a like bigger message or sort of a point he's making, and having this movie be so like over the top in some ways?
I mean, okay, so I feel like it's hard to talk about that without talking about the ending. Yes.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe we just have to spoil it. So I had seen a tweet early, like before I had seen the movie, not from someone who had seen it, but just like in general, that was like, oh, like the most Yorgos thing is that she's just going to end up being an alien. And I sort of had that in the back of my mind. So as it was going on, like I kept being like, yeah, she's definitely an alien. And I'd be like, well, maybe she's not. Like maybe that's sort of the thing. But then at the end, she does turn out to be an alien.
And it feels like the existence of this movie, that was inevitable. Like it's like, because this isn't like your run-of-the-mill hostage movie, right? Like it's taking itself so seriously that it's like, okay, well, this is going to be, I don't know. It seemed inevitable. It did. I don't know if knowing that really robbed the experience, but.
I do think, though, that there is a world in which this movie works without her being an alien, mm-hmm. where it's like you as the audience, like start to believe that he is correct, and sort of, you know, think that yeah, that's where this is going, that she is going to be an alien. And then it gets to the end and she was never an alien, and she just goes back to work as a corporate lawyer, and he goes to jail or dies or whatever. And that it's kind of like a statement on like,
how dumb conspiracies are.
But I feel like sort of like how like how the world has like driven these people to conspiracy theories because of like these horrible tech billionaires and such.
Right.
And that at the end of the day, the conspiracy theories only end up hurting the poor people, and the rich people sort of like go on with their life and don't care, which I kind of think is the message that the movie is trying to give, even if it's
which is the confusing part.
Yes, which is the confusing part, because I think that's the message that the movie wants to give, but by switching it and making it so like he was right all along, she is an alien, and then sort of even switching it again where the aliens are actually the good people.
No, I disagree with that. I've seen that a couple of times, and that's where I'm like, am I just dumb? Because I didn't get the sense the aliens were the good people. They want you to think they're the good people, but they're the callous people who decide, like, after a few experiments, no, humanity is worthless. Like, poop, gone.
I guess it depends on sort of where you think humanity is going. Because they're not like, oh, it's not like, oh, Thanos, like destroyer of worlds or whatever. Because they're like humans are destroying like the planet. And so we are going to get rid of humans so that the like planet can survive, and so that bees can come back, and, you know, like animals can live or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, like, I guess is not a viewpoint that, like, I'm not pro, like, yeah, let's kill all humans so that animals can survive. Like, I'm...
like, you're pretty honestly, anti-animal.
I'm actually anti-animal in general. Anti-pet. I'm pro-animal. Anti-pet. But, yeah, I don't... Like, it's tricky because I really like this movie. I really like... the message that I would say that I think the movie is trying to put out there in the world. Mm-hmm. I really like the acting. I really like the various scenes. And I think the way that the twist is executed is really funny and sort of entertaining.
Yeah.
Where like she's an alien, and in order to go to the mothership, you have to go in the closet and hit a bunch of buttons on a calculator, and you're kind of like, what is going on? And then because he's wearing a suicide vest, like, he ends up blowing up in the closet, and then she wakes up in an ambulance and has to sort of, like, bloodily and barefoot, like, break back into a crime scene to go back into this closet in order to send herself up to the spaceship. Yeah. So, like, I thought that I really liked all of that. I do think it makes the message of the movie kind of muddy. And I wish that it sort of like stuck the landing a bit better. But I did really like it. And I thought that the final scene or sequence of all of sort of like the dead bodies in different scenarios was so well shot and constructed, and those images were just so incredible that I feel like I left the movie theater being like, wow, that was amazing. And then sort of trying to pick it apart a bit, I'm like, it's complex in maybe a way that feels like more messy than like purposefully complex.
Right. Yeah, because I kind of left and I was like, that just felt like maybe a fun exercise. And it's based on a Korean movie, Save the Green Planet, that is much more slapstick and kind of like punchy. And it's like, you know, 20, 30 years old, but still kind of carries the same themes, but does it in a more maybe over the top way, which obviously this is still over the top, but exists in a kind of darker space. And so it was sort of like, well, maybe he just wanted a fun movie. Like, he worked for a decade on Poor Things or whatever he and Emma Stone said, and Kinds of Kindness was kind of in the running too. And this film kind of fell into his lap because the writer was originally paired with a different director, but the director stepped out. They pitched it to Yorgos and he was like, oh yeah, this is a cool story. Emma liked it. So it was like an easy match stylistically.
And but obviously then the shoot wasn't very involved because it's mostly just like in one house in a basement.
Right.
So it's not like Poor Things where, you know, they're having to create these whole sets and stuff.
So I was like, well, maybe it's not that deep. But then I was reading all these reviews and it's like, oh my God, this movie is the, has so much to say about where we are right now. And does Yorgos have any hope for humanity? And he's like giving interviews where he's saying, like, responding to people being like, this is so pessimistic. And he's like, actually, I find it really optimistic because, like, nature will rise again, which I'm like, oh, okay. So is it like, I found myself struggling to like make sense of this, which I guess is a sign of a fun, good movie of like, you know, you get, you still think about it, you want to make sense of it. But it does feel a little, like you said, muddied. And I actually circled back to why the hell is it called Begonia? And that's where I feel like the bow came together. The bow was tied. And Begonia is a Greek term, referring to this idea that bees can grow out of a dead cow, like, as long as there's no blood spilt. It was like this old idea that if you somehow can sacrifice a cow through a bloodless way, a sort of torturous, slow death, then bees will come out of that corpse. And bees obviously are a big part of this story where, you know, Jesse Plemons is a beekeeper. They have a lot of conversations about why the bees are dying. Well, actually, they're not dying, but actually they're really easy to manipulate and control because they're such hardy workers. And so once I like clocked that, it was sort of like, oh, okay, like maybe this is more about this idea that humanity is well and truly fucked, but there might be a chance for something to grow out of it. Which I don't necessarily agree with, but I'm like, oh, is that the point? Is that why this tangled web maybe works? But I don't know.
I mean, one, I definitely just thought that this was called Begonia, like the flower, which I'm now realizing is spelled differently.
I didn't even know there was a flower. Okay. Yeah, there's you.
Yes, there's definitely a flower called a begonia, but it's B-E-G, not B-U-G. But anyways, I guess I didn't really know what it was spelled like. So I was like, oh, begonia, like the flower. And then I was like, it was probably one of those flowers that like that the bees are in the movie. And so that's why it's called that, like randomly. And also it's just like a weird title. But okay, no, this makes more sense.
More, you know.
I mean, I do think that there is that level to it of like, okay, sometimes you just have to kind of like go, like something is really terrible and there's not really a way out of it, but like there can still be good that comes from it.
Because I think where I got like to dig into the ending is she turns out to be the actual empress. And they're having like a final, you know, group meeting after this sort of bloody close call. And they're like, well, our experiments have kind of failed. So like, what should we do? And she's like, yeah, it's not worth it. We'll just toss the whole thing. And then she pops the bubble and then everyone dies in a sort of painless, instantaneous way. And the song choice is like some folksy, very, I don't know, kind of upbeat or just kind of vibey, vibey song, as you see these really sad, but also kind of like interesting or emotive scenes of humanity. Like just, you know, it's not showing like tourists at the Taj Mahal dead in a pile. It's just people in a classroom or people having sex or, you know, workers just dropping dead in the assembly line. And I thought that was really affecting because it's like, well, this is just the littlest. These are all just, I mean, on one hand, it's like, yeah, these are all cogs in a machine. We're all just busy worker bees who don't really have any power and are just at the mercy of these higher ups who don't really see us as worthy of salvation or support. And so there was like that element where you're like, man, that sucks. That's like so sad. But then there is something also really beautiful about like, oh, like humanity is all these little moments in between. And it's not like the biggest, brightest, flashiest life. It's these little, you know, taking your kid to school or going to the dance or whatever. And so all of that I thought was like really good at highlighting like the highs and lows of humanity, and in the sense of how little we get to control, but how insistent we still are at making life. And so I liked that. But then I think back to Emma Stone's speech at the very end when she cops to being a alien. And at first you don't know if she's just trying to, you know, manipulate Jesse Plemons and just spins this tale of what he wants to hear. But the way she talks about her alien race is like, yeah, they were here before the dinosaurs and then they made humans, but like the humans kind of took, they went rogue, and humanity's actually just been a corruption of that original ideal. And so the Andromedans came back to see if they could save them from themselves, and they've been running experiments and whatnot. And I was sort of curious about, like, you know, because you mentioned saying like, oh, the aliens are the good guys, but there's something like callous in that speech where I was like, are they though, or are they just passing the buck again by saying like, we didn't do this, while also insisting that they were the originals, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering, okay, I mean, coming up with new theories while we're
okay,
I'm
love
like,
it.
I wonder if sort of the point of the movie is maybe like not meddling in things, like trying, because yeah, it's like they screwed up things for the dinosaurs, and so then they invented people who then, you know, couldn't get their shit together and were screwing things up in various ways. So then they kind of just ended up being like, you know what, let's scrap all of this and just go back to like letting the animals be animals. And I do think that that is kind of also the takeaway with the bees thing of like, yeah, they're really easy to manipulate. You can make them do things. You can get involved in that situation, but inevitably that can go wrong. And so you kind of just need to like let the natural order of things progress. And I think even with the sort of class structure of stuff and all of the dead people at the end in just like their regular jobs of, I don't know that we've ever really seen this in the world necessarily, but it does feel like if everybody was just sort of satisfied with a normal job, doing normal things and a normal life, and we all proceeded, that everyone could be pretty happy. But the issue is that there's always people who don't want that, who want more and better and are greedy. And so when they do that, it sort of screws up the whole system. And that's what, and it's, so it's the characters like Emma Stone's who are, you know, these like tech pharmaceutical bosses or whatever, who are trying to screw over people to make money, that ends up causing the more like worker bee type people like Jesse Plemons' characters to have to take on these conspiracy theories and whatever, when in actuality, if she would just be fine with, you know, making medicine that helps people and charging a appropriate amount for that, then everybody's lives would be better. So I do feel like that sort of works in the different capacities of the film. Like, yeah, just like everyone be satisfied. If everyone is sort of like a worker bee, then everyone kind of ends up happy in the end. But the moment you start to try to break out from that.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We have Mom Donnie on the phone. Like, oh, communist.
He has been texting me. Mom Donnie has been texting me a lot. So, you know.
No, I mean, and that's where I circle. I'm like, oh, okay. But then I circle back to the messiness of Jesse Plemons' character and sort of like, well, what is this? Like, you know, and I think that's what's interesting on the discourse too, is similar to Eddington, it's like, oh yeah, this like brain rot is a huge threat, even if it's based, like we're looking at the wrong problems, or he's obsessed with the idea that if he can just talk to this alien race, then they'll go away and everything will be better. And her argument is like, no, it won't. You guys have ruined the environment. You have wars. You have class issues. Nothing will be better. We're trying to cure the actual rot. And so it's like positioned as a sort of battle of who has the right solution. And neither of them do, because both of them end in sort of these nihilistic. I mean, he's literally a serial killer. Like, that's just crazy behavior. I mean,
yeah, it is. Like, I think that he can be, like, obviously he's such a tragic figure because he's driven to kind of madness because of the social situation that he's in with his mom, mm-hmm. or whatever. And then also you learn at some point that he like maybe was molested by the childhood babysitter, yeah. who's now a town cop. Like,
yeah.
So there's a, it's like he's clearly been through a lot, mm-hmm. and is driven to, yes, like basically become a serial killer because he's looking for a way out of this life by talking to these aliens. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think like whether or not the aliens end up being aliens, like, yes, he's right about that at the end, mm-hmm. but it doesn't help him. It doesn't help right. anybody. It turns out that they're actually the ones who are sort of responsible for some of the negative things that are going on in his life rather than
right.
That they're, you know, going to help him. And I think all of the same like social lessons still apply, even though you could say that the movie is not necessarily like anti-conspiracy theory because like the conspiracy theorist ends up being correct in this. Mm. I sort of feel like maybe he's not like, I think that maybe the conspiracy theory part of it isn't that much of the message. You know what I mean? Like maybe the movie isn't. Like it is, but maybe it's not necessarily supposed to be like, oh, this is either like pro conspiracy theory or right. anti conspiracy theory. It's more like, okay, what is, in a perfect world, nobody would have to have these conspiracy theories right. because everyone would be fine with what's going on in their lives. Like people are driven to this level, whether it's correct or not, because of the world being so bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting, and I think like obviously relevant because we're just in an era where conspiracy theories are much more prevalent and also deeper and darker and leading to more violence. Like it's just factual that, you know, oh, we used to joke about the moon landing and now we have literal assassins going to like shoot up a pizza shop because the internet told them to. And it's like,
well, and Kim Kardashian thinks the moon landing.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's like a range of like, oh, harmless, dumb conspiracy to like literal violence. And that's only ramping up as more and more people are dissatisfied in their lives or looking for something to explain why things aren't working. And there's something interesting about that's happening in this movie where there's a lot of other tangible, logical reasons to explain Jesse Plemons, you know, dirty, disgustingly sad life. And we get those hints where his mom was an addict. His mom is now in a coma. His dad's nowhere to be seen. He was abused. He's responsible for this cousin. And yet he's insistent that his solution isn't solving any one of those problems, but more there has to be a bigger, bloodier conclusion. And it's like, well, even as he gets to that, it still doesn't help him, which is interesting. But it is also like frustrating to think of this movie as like, oh, it's about class. It's about the 1% and these corporate overlords who don't care about who is sacrificed in the name of profit. And so the idea of this Empress alien existing as a mid-level like CEO or like a pharma, you know, CEO. It's sort of like, I'm just curious. I want to understand how the pieces fit together, because to me, it's like, I don't know. Like, maybe that's the point, is the whole movie starts to feel like a conspiracy and you're trying to find answers in the smallest details, when really it's just like a sad opera of, like, you know, tragicomedy that, I don't know, kind of ends up just in a melodramatic fit. But it's like, yeah, I don't know if this works as a metaphor for corporate, you know, control, or the 1% versus the 99, or anti-conspiracy, or, like, you know, I don't know, like public discourse, or if it's just trying to exist in that framework for some other, like, pro-environmentalism message, you know?
Yeah, it's like, it's definitely pro-environment. It definitely, like, feels like it's both anti-conspiracy theorist and anti, like, corporate overlord. But then when you look at it closely, the details don't necessarily all swing in those same directions. So it's like, how does this all work? But yeah, I mean, I don't, like, I think I would need to see it a second time, I guess, in order to kind of, like, put all of this together. I feel like this is similar to reading, like, a good book in some ways, where some, like, especially some of the, like, classics that you read, you know, like Faulkner or somebody, it's like, they're confusing, and it's kind of hard to tell whether the confusion is like a puzzle that you can sort of, like, right, solve out, and if you can make it through, like, it becomes something that's very, yeah, magical, or if the confusion is like, oh, like an accident, yeah, or, yeah, they were just bad at this or whatever, yeah. And clearly there's people throughout history who have, like, taken both, yeah, sides on that, you know, like, yeah, you can read a Faulkner novel and be like, this is a masterpiece, or you can, yeah, read it and be like, what is going on here, like, I, yeah, don't understand this. But
well, and that's also, like, I think that's part of my issue with Poor Things, is sort of Yorgos and Emma Stone in some ways having this sort of, like, maybe holier than thou attitude towards their sort of nihilism, or kind of, like, how they view poverty or how they address poverty. I didn't think it was so egregious here, but I did feel like, kind of like, okay, like, who are you to kind of, like, flippantly write off the issues of today when you are part of this 1%, you know, like, realistically. And I think that's an interesting issue with artists, and, like, who gets to tell the stories, and how, as one's star rises, like, their distance between, you know, reality, you know, shifts and grows, and kind of, like, how that feeds the art they then create, even if, you know, like, even looking at someone like Taylor Swift and her relatability, or going into, like, celebrity and millionaires and billionaires, and who's giving enough, and what awareness can they still carry once they're in this, like, heightened privileged state to then look down and address the issues. It becomes sort of like a meta commentary on, like, well, are you now one of the aliens, or are you still one of the worker bees? And, like, who gets to explain that to the masses? And, like,
yeah,
and I don't know, like, with this movie in particular being so, like, talky and having you on both sides of a very, you know, dramatic divide, it's sort of like, is it fair that Yorgos can call these delusions, like, dangerous if they're also rooted in reality? Or is he just using the sort of, like, hyper, you know, crazy cuckoo guy as sort of a fun way to explore, like, a more, I don't know, like a less literal story about, like, what is life, you know?
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I don't know, because it's like there is a lot of sympathy to be found for Jesse Plemons' characters, but it's also like, well, he's disgusting and a murderer and also manipulative and also unwilling to kind of like confront issues or his part in these issues.
But I think there's a lot of sympathy for his like cousin. Is it his cousin?
Yeah.
An actor with autism. Yeah. And he, like, that character, I think, is really sort of like the heart and soul of the movie. And you feel really bad for what happens in to him, which is like that he just like gets caught up in the fray between these two people who are so intent on, you know, having their way and proving their point that they like end up sort of killing the character who's like the purest, I guess, in a lot of ways. Yeah, I don't like, I do, I always think it's weird when like as people's careers go on, like what kind of art can you sort of make? You know, I feel like we had similar conversations with like Killers of the Flower Moon and some of like Martin Scorsese's kind of movies where it's like, okay, well sometimes he's trying to like use his power to tell stories about that are other people's, which feels kind of weird. But then if he just sort of like makes another gangster movie, that also feels weird. So it's kind of like, what do you do when you become like a rich creative person and you're sort of like out of, you know, personal kind of stories to tell? But yeah, I mean, I really, I liked Poor Things because I felt like it was, it felt very personal to me as sort of like a metaphor for queerness. So I had like an emotional connection with that movie that I think I did not necessarily have with Begonia. Like at no point of this where I was like, oh, I see myself on the screen.
Yeah.
So I don't think that Begonia is a movie that like in 10 years I'm going to be listing as like one of my favorites.
Yeah. Top four.
But yeah, I don't know. It is.
Yeah.
It does sort of like leave you with more questions than answers in some ways, which I don't know if that's like a positive thing or a negative thing.
I think I want to believe there was a good intention behind this, but I'm also like, well, it does feel pretty, I don't know, it's been done at this point. Like you have your corporate greed and you have your conspiracy and it turns out like humanity's doomed. And it's just like, okay, that's like nihilism 101, featuring a lot of tropes that we've already explored in a lot of different things. So like, what is this really adding? But it was a really well-made film. Like, it was definitely like, I enjoyed this artistically more than some of his other stuff. And I think it was really beautifully shot and the score was impactful and Jesse Plemons, I think, deserves all the flowers. Emma Stone was good, too.
Yeah, I think they're both very good. Jesse Plemons is one of those actors who feels like keeps being incredible in things and not quite getting all of the accolades he deserves.
I just want him. I want him to be the star of this one.
I think that he will get Best Actor nomination. Like, I think that that will happen. Because I think this movie is going to be in the mix enough. Yeah. And like his performance,
I don't need Emma
really
to
so
be
strong.
Nominated again for this. Like, I don't know. I know everyone's like, wow, this is her best. And I'm like, I don't think she's winning.
I think she could get nominated for this. But I also feel like it could be the situation with, was it Leonardo DiCaprio in Killers of the Flower Moon? Yeah, where I don't think he got, there was some movie, and or maybe it was Don't Look Up, or maybe it was both, honestly, where he didn't get nominated, and it's kind of like, yeah, like, you've had so many nominations, and you were good in this thing, but we're just gonna sort of, like, give the spot to somebody else who hasn't gotten the recognition, you know, like Rose Byrne, or Jesse Buckley, or, you know, somebody else who's in one of these movies. And I will never say no to a movie that makes a corporate pharmaceutical overlord look like a bad person, because you know, I think that the messaging is finally starting to get across that like billionaires are bad, like being a billionaire is not a good thing, being a billionaire proves that you're a bad person, and I think that we just need to keep drumming that drum. Like, we need to make it so that it is embarrassing if you're a billionaire. Like, Nobody okay, Billie needs Eilish. To be in it.
Yeah.
Because yeah. like, okay, not to go off on a tangent or whatever. Like I truly have no idea how much money Emma Stone has. Like I'm going to actually look this up. Mm-hmm. Emma Stone net worth. Emma Stone net worth.
$2. She's one of the people.
According to celebrity net worth, she's worth $60 million, which like, okay, yeah. is that a lot of money? Yes. Is that anywhere near a billion? No. Like, I am willing, like, I am not a socialist to the degree of like, okay, we need everybody to have the same level of income. Like, I think if you are Emma Stone and you are like a celebrity, like $60 yeah. million dollars is like an amount of money that I am fine with you having. Okay. Like,
that's the cap.
And I don't know how, and like, I assume your Yorgos Lanthimos like has significantly less than that, because it's not like he's doing like brand deals and stuff, which I think is where you make most of your money if you're a famous person.
Right. There's layers to it.
Yes. I mean, but I'm like, to be a billionaire, like the business people are the people who I am just right. like infuriated by, or the artist
giving nothing back, yes. literally,
or
no
the
artistic
artist.
Power.
Yeah. And the thing with like with Emma Stone is like, is she negatively impacting people in order to get this money? Like, I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I guess I would have to think about that more. But it's not like she had like, I don't know how much she's paying her assistant.
She doesn't have her own company where right. she's not paying workers.
Yes, where she's like has
her.
People like in a sweatshop or something. Yeah, like, yes.
Yeah.
No, like she's
Beyonce
not
or Rihanna or Taylor.
Right, no. Like I like Beyonce, Rihanna, Taylor, Selena Gomez. I am like, one, if you're a celebrity and then you move into this corporate space, like I don't like that. Yeah. But I think if you're just like an actress and you're making a decent amount of money, or you're like, you're still giving something to the world and you're trying to say something. And Emma Stone, by all accounts, like seems to be a good, lovely person. I don't know her, and she's rich, so whatever. But like, I do.
We eat the rich, but in tears. Okay, so well, she's
I'm like,
maybe
if we, if we're eating the rich, like if we redistributed Elon Musk's money mm-hmm, to the mm-hmm, world, like mm-hmm. that would impact
he
and
actually
help
actually cured hunger. Yeah,
a lot of people. Like yeah. he has so much money that could go a long way in a yeah. lot of different situations, and not just that, but like he could just be paying all of his
yeah
employees more and hiring more people, yeah. and that would by itself like just impact so many lives globally yeah. because he has people working in all kinds of different countries. Where I'm like, if you gave Emma Stone $60 million to something, like, yes, that is a lot of money, but also like, and it would impact a lot of people's lives, but it's not like such a crazy amount.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm like, yeah. let's go, let's start with everybody who makes over a billion. Once we're done with them, then we can sort of like go to those who make like 500, who have like 500, yeah, yeah. like 1,000 million or whatever. Because yeah. okay. how many million are in a billion? 1,000?
How many million are in a billion?
Yes. Like it's, what?
So you get a million, then you add a zero, and then you get a billion, and then you add a zero, and then you get a trillion.
So 100 million is the same as a billion.
No, it's 999 million becomes a billion.
Okay, yes. Okay, wait. So Emma Stone actually has so much less money than Elon. That's like insane. Like,
well, yeah. No, I love this. I love breaking down. Yeah, no, a billion is an inconceivable amount of money, and I wish people knew that more. But I am wondering what you're getting at. Oh, you're just saying that I should allow these artists to say what they want.
No. I wasn't necessarily saying that. I honestly don't really know where the point of this was going. other than just like I hate billionaires.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's
we
like
should be, yeah.
even when we're talking about the 1%, there's tears within that. And there is a number of business billionaires, techno controlling the market billionaires, who do not get the same attention as these more artistic, celeb, extraordinaire millionaires, or even, you know.
Because if Emma Stone only has 60 million, like, I think, like there are...
According to CelebrityNetWorth.com, correct.
An infallible site. Like, yeah. There's so, like obviously there's, like, the tech billionaires who there's Mark Zuckerberg, like, who we know, who's a billionaire. But I think that there's also, like, loads of people who are like, more secret millionaires, who are in that tier that are making, you know, like, 500 million, whatever, above. And I'm like, that all of those people are not actually, like, helping the world at all. Like, they're actively making the world worse. They're giving us nothing.
So are you team Andromedon then? Do you want a refresh? Do you want a reset?
I don't want a refresh, because I feel like that means that there are lots of good people in the world. Yes, it's just like a couple of bad people really screwing it over. Yes. And that's why we need the government to start taxing them more.
Well, your team, Jesse Plemons, then. You want to gather the autocrats and say, get off this planet, please, and then we'll be fine.
Well, I think that there are always going to be new ones. So I think history has shown solution. Itself that you can't. I think you have to sort of, like, keep everybody in check a bit.
Okay. I'm loving this, like, Matthew takes on, you know,
the billionaires,
communism, some sort of solution you're working through. You're planning the next phase of. You know, democracy is almost dead. So what is Matt's ocracy going to be?
And I'm like, let's get the Hollywood people on board. You know, like, I think if you're an actor and you don't own a weird side business,
right,
then I'm willing to have you on. I'm willing to take you as an ally. Like, I think we need as many allies as we can get. And I think I'll take Emma Stone.
Okay.
Yeah, Selena Gomez, I don't know.
Unsure at this point.
And Beyonce is very on the bubble. Because while the billionaire thing is terrible, and I really hate that aspect of it, I do feel like she is at least delivering art.
She's giving that diversity speech that Emma Stone gives in the movie.
Yeah, I guess so.
She's selling just the right amount.
Okay, we'll save. Oh, she can be the last billionaire we get to. We'll go for the other billionaires first, and then Beyonce.
Okay, this is Matt's opus now. When you find him sweating in a basement in 10 to 20 years.
How does Beyonce have $1 billion?
What? I mean, because in your language, she's stepped into the corporate world. About 16. Ivy Park is a huge one.
Oh, yes. Ivy Park. Yes. For some reason, the only thing that was coming to my mind was Sacred and the whiskey line. And I was like, wait, is that successful? Oh, yes. No, Ivy Park. Okay, yes. Yeah. No. Okay, yes. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yes. Yeah. No, it's Ivy Park and then record labels and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Yes. Same.
Yeah.
Okay. I never buy Ivy Park. So I forget that it exists, but I understand that.
Well, no, those little peons working for her in, you know, wherever.
Yeah, Guatemala or someplace.
Yeah, wishing they had food for the day. They probably like her music, too.
Okay, yeah, so fine. So
class warfare.
We'll make some concessions.
We'll have to make a plan.
There needs to be we need a strategy. And I think there's
people.
We can't
lose focus. Okay.
Right. No. And we have to go in order. We have to go in order. Beyonce, you get two more albums in your time, and then we're cutting the cord. Yeah. No, I think it. I think if we took all Beyonce's money away, that could lead to a really great album. You know, she could have to sort of dig deep and face some demons or whatever. And
Begonia, we're going to strip money from these people and then they have to start over. They have to go through a rebirth and they can try.
I could be down for that. I could be down for that again.
And if they get a billion again through ethical means, then sure, they can keep it. Is that fair?
Well, I don't think there's a way to make $1 billion via ethical
means. Yeah, no, true.
So I don't think that's the case. But I do think that everyone should have to be poor at some point in their life. And so, oh like...
No. You don't need to... I think I know what you mean. But I think the solution is to lift everyone up rather than let everyone suffer so that they can feel better about not suffering.
Right, but I'm not talking about suffering necessarily. I'm talking about having a normal existence. Like, I'm not saying that everyone should be, like, destitute on the street, you know, prostrating themselves for cash. I'm saying that everybody should have to, at some point in their life, like, spend a year working at a JCPenney. Mm. Like, so that they understand sort of, like...
That was your low point, was your H&M era.
No, I loved working at H&M. my low point, I don't even know when that, like, the
have you truly suffered enough, Matt, or should we send you to JCPenney for a year?
This is me working at H&M is a whole separate side conversation, but I think working at H&M was the first time that I ever met and became friends with people who were not Christians and who were Democrats and had like interesting views and were interesting people. So I felt so like alive and invigorated whenever I went into work there that I think it's, I don't think you can really classify that in the same way. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think lots of people who work at H&M and probably have like not great experiences, but for me, it was different.
You're like, wait, I'm team H&M. Actually, they're famously great people.
But in the same way that I think the pandemic was really great for me personally, but not great for other people. Like, you know, it's hard to...
So in the Mattocracy, H&M is not low enough. We have to get people working at JCPenney or maybe like Dairy Queen, do you think?
I would love to work at Dairy Queen. Like, sorry, not sorry. You're free blizzards every day.
You're finding the positive spin on everything.
That's the thing.
It's fine. It's not that deep.
I don't know if this is like a natural thing or if this is like because I grew up as a Christian, you know, and whatever, and internalized those views. But I'm like, I really do truly believe that I have zero interest in life in being rich. Like, I would like to be in a position where like, okay, yes, I like don't really have to think about money very much and I can go on like two semi-nice vacations a year. But like, the thought of owning a mansion has zero like appeal to me.
What about a brownstone?
Like even a brownstone.
What about a reasonable 2-floor brownstone, 3-bedroom, 2-bath?
Like, yeah, that I would be fine with. But I don't think you have to be, well, I mean, in New York, you have to be rich to own that. But like, I would be fine having a 2-bedroom apartment that I share with my husband and you know that we pay rent on the rest of my like I don't necessarily need to own something you know like I don't want to have to move like every apartment. 3 years but like I don't want a boat. I don't want like fancy designer clothes. I don't need to go to restaurants that are, you know, like $4,000 for dinner. Like I have very little interest in any of those things.
Matt's feeling chatty today. It's like, okay, yeah, that's great. I love a vision board.
I mean, do you want to be rich?
I just am wondering what the relevancy is. But do I want to be rich? No, yes. I mean, I would
what
like to be...
What level of rich would you like to be?
What level of rich? Okay, put it in writing. I think I would like to be comfortable in that I would want to be able to not think about money. But it's like, what's the question here? At what cost? Like, obviously, I would choose just a stable life if it meant other people could have, you know, a stable life too. What would feel nice? Like, it'd be nice to be able to take care of my family or like, you know, be able to give in a way that felt meaningful. But I would rather I would rather have everyone on an equal playing field in an ideal world, a universal income, let's say, I would welcome rather than having to be generous in spirit.
I don't think that you need to make that much money to not think about money. I mean, I understand that there's like the creeping sort of like price scale of like, okay, then you start buying fancier things and then you start spending more money on stuff. So then you have to start thinking about like, I do know that that's a thing. And obviously like, you know, there's putting your kid through college and like all of that kind of stuff. But I don't think that you need to be, you know, have $60 million in order to like not think about money.
Yeah.
And I mean, also, yeah. I'm like, I think if I like, I feel like if I made $200,000 a year, that would be way more than I would need. And that's living in New York City, which is a pretty expensive place.
So then, okay, you get a raise, you're making 200K. What do you do?
Well, then I just give stuff away more, I guess.
Or would you think, okay, well, that's nice. I earned this. I'm gonna rent a nicer place.
I don't think so, because I like what kind of, like I don't need more space. Like my apartment's already too big.
Well, you're in a basement. Like maybe you'd want a view.
Okay.
Maybe well, you'd want a
yes, but I could but like
maybe you'd want a wall around your bed, you know?
Okay. Now it feels like you are coming for me and saying that my way of life is not good enough.
No.
And you're just, like, if only you had more money, you wouldn't be so basic. I have lost the plot.
I am not quite sure the goal here. So I am,
the goal is that we're taking money. Okay. We have to wrap this up. I don't know how this has gone on so long.
I don't either, Matt.
Well, okay. Neither here nor there. Okay. Let me just make some final thoughts. The thought is we're taking the money from the billionaires. We're not necessarily taking it. We're taxing them, whatever.
Right. Everyone
Everyone gets paid livable wages.
Impacted. Maybe that's your point. It's yes. The billionaires need to trickle down way past us.
Yes. Way past us.
Yeah.
And then, yes. And then, right. And then nobody actually needs to be making that much money. Like,
right.
Like, you know, we're putting Emma Stone at the cap, you know, and
she nailed it. She's right
She's figured out the richest that we need anyone to be. Everyone else can be middle class. That's what we're going for. We're going for middle class.
We're recreating the middle class.
I want like 1960s Michigan where you can work on an assembly line and own a home.
Well, yeah, that's the goal, right? Is you work, you earn a living.
Right.
It should be
that's what we're trying to do. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, that's what we've been saying.
And we can take this message to the drama was saying,
I think, in the movie.
Exactly. We can take it and we'll say, you don't need to pop that bubble. All you need to do is just universal income that shit.
Rework the tax bracket. Yeah.
We've been saying it all along. Tax the rich. That's it.
Tax the rich.
Maybe the CEO of the tech pharma company, alien empress that she is, could have thought of that as a potential solution.
Yeah, because how much money is she giving away?
Exactly. No, she's not giving. She's torturing people and offering fake apologies, which is also circling back to the confusion of the film.
Okay. Yeah, because she really is cosplaying as a shitty person, even though she's like a good alien.
Huh. And she wants none of the... She wants to point fingers and blame everyone else for the problems. But it's like, well, maybe as empress of a higher being, a higher power, you could have maybe made yourself president of the free world and then figured that out in a more useful way than as a pharma
interesting
CEO.
Okay. Well,
little sad.
Lots to discuss. Do we know what we're doing next week? Really is the question.
Next week. No, but we'll find something. And if not, you can just take this, think about it some more, and come back next week with a full plan. Okay.
Next week,
campaign going.
You know what we actually have to cover next week? Because I want to talk about how much I hated it, is Frankenstein Arrives on Netflix. So, I know you'll have thoughts because you did like Frankenstein.
I hate Frankenstein.
I thought, isn't Frankenstein one of your favorite books?
I hate Frankenstein. No. I hate Frankenstein. I'm sorry to tell you that.
What am I literally thinking of? Didn't you write a paper about... Yeah,
I was forced famously because I was working in college, you know, doing my Matt version of suffering, learning how to be poor. I could only take only one thesis class lined up with my schedule, and it was the Frankenstein lit theory class. And so my entire senior year was dedicated to Frankenstein, my most hated novel, and I only got through it because I tied it in with Jurassic Park.
I'm like, maybe what I have heard is that you wrote your thesis on Jurassic Park and Frankenstein and just assumed that you really liked Frankenstein. Because I was like, oh, why would you choose to do a thesis on something you don't like? And you do love Jurassic Park, so it must be that you like the two of these together. And not, I don't think I ever learned that you had to take a whole class on Frankenstein, because that's actually insane.
Yeah, it was. Thank you. Thank you for your sympathy.
Yeah, no, that's well, okay. Well, then you'll be very well-versed and prepared for this next.
Yeah, I am unfortunately an expert, so.
Yes. Okay. Well, we'll be back next week to discuss Shelby's perhaps like education theories. And we'll and Frank said, this is how we're pivoting the podcast into sort of like more
political justice commentary. Yeah.
Yes. Are you making, is Frankenstein making less or more than Emma Stone? Really,
Frankenstein has too much money on his hands, and now he's a hobbyist.
Where did he get the dog sled? Like, you have to be rich in order to get one of those. Okay. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this wild episode. We'll be back next week. Bye.